Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What comes to mind when you think of Amber Heard? A liar? A survivor? A narcissist? The trial of Depp v. Heard was a global phenomenon, but I want to know, was it a fair fight? I'm Alexi Mostras, the host of Sweet Bobby and Hoaxed. In my new podcast, I'm investigating whether Amber Heard was the victim of an organised trolling campaign.
The entire series is now available to binge wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Who Trolled Amber.
Michaela Cole's name has become pretty much impossible to ignore. In lockdown, when there was little else to do but watch TV, her series, I May Destroy You, dropped a cultural bomb on our TV screens. And the timing of it really mattered. Just as cities across the US and the UK were seeing thousands of young people chanting Black Lives Matter, Michaela Cole's series was confronting what it means to be black and British. But it was doing so much more than that too. It was examining rape and trauma and fierce friendship and periods and absent fathers and the power and the danger of Grindr. So something big happened with I May Destroy You, and that's why this week we're moving from slow news to slow reviews. Because if we take a longer view, we can start to understand the significance of what we've just watched. We can better understand what Cole actually achieved with this series and how she came to do it. I'm Basha Cummings, and in this week's Slow News podcast, I'm joined by Yomi Adeguike, a writer, a columnist for The Guardian newspaper, and the co-author of the amazingly named book Slay in Your Lane, or The Black Girl Bible. Yomi has a clear argument. I May Destroy You is radical, but if we're talking about the transformative power of TV, it was actually Cole's show from 5 years ago, called Chewing Gum, that really changed the game. It was that show that, for the first time, really captured something honest about growing up as a black girl in the UK.
All around the world, there's a crisis of leadership. Our leaders aren't pulling in the same direction, and the organisations where they used to get together have lost their way. The United Nations and the EU are stumbling. Russia, China and the US are going it alone. At Tortoise, we think no subject's too big for us all to talk about. This one's too big not to talk about. So we're drawing up a to-do list for the international community to lead the world out of this crisis. And we'd like your help. We're bringing together world leaders and changemakers on the 10th of September for the Tortoise G7 Billion Summit. 7 billion is the number of people in the world, by the way. We'd love you to join us. It's going to be a day of constructive debate, fresh thinking and bright ideas. Together, we can draw up a blueprint for global leadership that's fit for a better future. Just head to tortoisemedia.com/G7BN and use the code SLOWPOD to register for free. See you there.
Growing up in East London, the daughter of Ghanaian parents, Cole was the first black woman in 5 years to enrol at the prestigious Guildhall School of Music and Drama in London. She graduated in 2012, and in 2013 she staged a show called Chewing Gum Dreams, and it was that that was turned into a TV show for Channel 4 the following year. It was while pulling an all-nighter, drafting the second season of that show, which had already won a BAFTA, that, in 2016, Cole's drink was spiked in a bar, and she was sexually assaulted by two men. I May Destroy You, which came out in the UK a couple of months ago, is her attempt to make sense of what happened to her. But it was also about taking control. I May Destroy You aired on the BBC here in the UK and on HBO in America, but it nearly ended up on Netflix. Speaking to Vulture magazine, Cole said that she refused Netflix's $1 million deal after they refused to let her retain a portion of the copyright. As she explained in that interview, she said that she grew uncomfortable with the prospect of dedicating 2.5 years of my life to a show exploring exploitation and the loss of power while also losing all my rights. So on many fronts, Cole is a trailblazer. In her 2018 MacTaggart Lecture, which is the centrepiece of the Edinburgh International Television Festival, she gave a searing address. Age 30, she was the youngest person ever invited to give the keynote lecture. She was only the fifth woman, and she was the first from an ethnic minority background.
What I can do is be transparent about my experiences, because transparency helps. The misfit doesn't climb in pursuit of safety or profit. She climbs to tell stories. She gets off the ladder and onto the swings, swinging back and forth, sometimes aggressively, sometimes standing up on the swing, back and forth in pursuit of only transparency. Observing the changes, but wonders if these changes are taking place within a faulty system. How can we help each other to fix a faulty system? Surely, we can help each other to fix a faulty house. Being a producer, being head of department, head of the house, being a human is a noisy job. Everything coming at you from all angles, all hours. I think it's important to make silence for yourself. 5 minutes to check if you're okay and interrogate your own morals and beliefs in relation to how you operate. Even if you do think about these things already, why not think a little more, a little deeper? Accepting I'm wrong is hard.
So Yomi and I talked about Michaela Cole, we talked about her work, we talked about growing up in London and what it was like for Yomi growing up without British TV and films that she could relate to in any meaningful way. And we talk most about why it matters that young black women see so little of themselves on screen. Hello, Yomi.
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us. So I wanted to start out talking about you, because so much of what we connect with in pop culture stems from our own experiences. And I wanted to just start off by asking you about your own childhood and about, you know, the pop culture icons that you really connected with when you were a kid or when you were a young teenager.
Oh gosh, I feel like there were so many, but I feel like the ones that really, really resonated were all like Nickelodeon based, actually. I didn't have the Disney Channel. So whilst everyone else was watching Recess, I was just watching loads and loads of cartoons and watched a lot of sort of live action shows with black protagonists, which there were so many back then, but I actually feel like there's much less now, actually. I watched Keenan and Kel on Nickelodeon heavily. I watched Sister Sister. So I used to watch a show called Moesha religiously. Everyone said that I looked like the protagonist, Brandy, who's like a musician and actress.
That must have been such a compliment.
Oh my God, it was such an ego boost. But yeah, I used to watch all these different shows that, like, yeah, were very kind of diverse, and it was just really strange getting older and feeling that that became less the case. I feel, you know, after that kind of golden era of these shows for kids that had these black kids and all these like wacky situations and stuff, I feel like there was a real kind of dearth when I was a teenager. It was definitely a time, it was definitely felt like a golden age.
So you're talking about in the early 90s when you were a kid, or the mid 90s, there were a load of TV shows and things that made you feel like, okay, I can kind of see myself in these characters, or I can identify with these kids. And then as you got older, that stopped.
Yeah, as I got, I guess, like, kind of when I reached my teenage years, that felt like it stopped, because I mean, I loved kids TV, so I was still watching like all these kiddie shows. So I was a teenager, but I just felt that, like, as I grew up, it's not like the shows were growing up with me. I mean, there was things like All of Us and, like, you know, My Wife and Kids and stuff, but I still feel like it just felt like growing up as I got older and as I started watching more adult television, it wasn't as prevalent. But also that when I was looking back at the kids' TV, it just stopped with that generation of shows, if that makes sense. I don't feel like there's a next wave of diverse programming.
A lot of the shows that you're talking about are American ones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally the vast majority.
Because I think that's one of the key things to understanding why Michaela Cole's work has been so important, because, you know, you're saying that as you get older, there's less and less that felt like it was relevant to your life or representative in some way. And now I think part of the reason why she's sort of exploded the TV conversation now and conversations that we're having about representation on TV and women working in that industry is because she's come and sort of filled a gap in a very radical way.
Definitely. I think Michaela Cole is singular in several ways, but I do think that definitely has been the case for some time. And anybody that's sort of engaged with chewing gum, but also even, you know, being so long.
This is Camden, where everyone has a story.
Who is it against the whole wide world?
Me and you.
Exactly, it is me and you.
She did that musical rom-com, which was just like the corniest but most amazing thing ever.
Because you never let nobody rub up on you, giving you a transcending experience.
I want a transcendent experience, I go to church.
And it was just like this really quite, in hindsight, radical depiction of like Black British love that we never see. In the American culture, there's a real kind of, you know, rom-com Black universe where there's just all these different films starring Gabrielle Union and like Vivica A. Fox. There's just hundreds. But in the UK, we don't have that culture. So rom-coms are very white. And I feel like with her film being so long, even that, like she's just a massive trailblazer.
And what does it mean to grow up and sort of, you know, be 16, 17, 18 years old and not have characters that are Black that are leading TV shows? What do you think that does to young Black women or young Black men?
I always say that me and my sisters, like, we have very active imaginations, and I do feel it's because you kind of fill those gaps yourself. I mean, you really get creative, you really learn to understand yourself through the experiences of others. This is why I hate when people act, you know, you need some sort of translator if you're watching shows with Black protagonists and you're not Black, because pretty much that's what we all spend the majority of our time and have spent the majority of our lives doing. Yeah, it definitely leads to a feeling of, I think, of erasure. It's definitely noticeable. It's something that growing up was a talking point. So you'd watch certain scenes and it might sound, you know, kind of like a throwaway thing, but I used to watch EastEnders and I'd see the lone Black character, Denise, and I'd watch her and sort of be like, why is she sleeping without a bonnet? Why doesn't she have a hairnet or a do-rag on? Like, no Black woman would just go to bed with just her hair. Like, you just pick up on these little things that just aren't accurate. It's a frustrating experience for sure.
And then, so you grew up in Croydon and then you went to Warwick University, and it's something that you've written about a lot in your book, which is called Slay in Your Lane. And it is, I think, at its core about how to thrive as a Black woman in predominantly white spaces and spaces that just aren't designed for you. And you felt that quite keenly when you arrived in Warwick.
Yes, I definitely did. I mean, I went to a school that was like predominantly white, but at the end of the day, I was commuting to school and then coming back to Croydon, which is like a very, very Black diverse borough. But with Warwick, obviously it was, I'm going to be away in a completely different area. And I remember being really worried about it. But I feel like the race thing was just one element, whereas I think it was the class stuff that really hit me, because like, I think I just learned a lot. Like, I met a lot of...
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. The risks posed by AI range from bias in decision-making to misinformation and the misuse of personal information, all at an unprecedented scale. Nearly a quarter of UK businesses understand that the regulatory landscape is changing fast, and nearly half are tracking new regulatory guidance to be responsive to emerging best practice. The EY Responsible AI Service helps organisations innovate safely, providing confidence that AI and generative AI technologies are developed and managed ethically, transparently, and sustainably, and that potential regulatory and reputational risks are identified and mitigated. Discover how you can create a better working world with AI by going to ey.ai. Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. Safe, efficient, and reliable railways help to keep us all connected, thanks to Network Rail. Yet, maintenance on the railways is a risky and sometimes fatal business. At Network Rail, two previous attempts to invigorate its track worker safety programs had failed, leaving employees feeling sceptical that the organisation could ever get railway safety right. Since 2019, EY teams have worked with Network Rail to deliver a transformation that improved safety protocols and changed employee behaviour around safety. Network Rail RailHub, a new digital safety platform and app, eliminated inaccurate paper trails and worked offline, so it could be used by workers in remote locations. Since the platform was introduced, near misses affecting maintenance workers on the railways have fallen by 40%. Read the full story at ey.com. Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. UK business leaders are quietly confident that better times are coming. More than half of those who responded to the recent EY CEO Outlook survey believe their profitability would increase in 2024. As businesses look to the future, transformation is clearly front and centre on the 2024 CEO agenda, with the vast majority of leaders planning to maintain or accelerate their transformational change in 2024. With 76% of CEOs in agreement that AI will deliver transformative efficiency benefits to their organisation, how can AI be put to use to enhance innovation efforts? Find out how integrating AI into your business could minimise the negative impacts on the workforce, boost productivity, and improve overall employee experience by reading the full report at ey.com.
People, and was without, with no offence whatsoever, no ill intention in saying this, but genuinely I'd meet people and be like, how did they end up here? Because this person just clearly doesn't take their studies seriously. They're not the sharpest tool in the box. And it really was kind of when I first came across the idea of like private school. I knew it existed, but just how you essentially were paying to be able to end up in an institution like this. And like the gaming of the system, it really kind of knocked me for six. It was just a real crazy time. And I just didn't really, I found it very difficult for several reasons.
It sounds like one of the ways that you kind of made peace with it, or you found a way through, was sort of accepting the fact that you didn't actually have to fit in, you know, that you didn't have to mold yourself into what a kind of Warwick student is. And that feels like it's very connected to Michaela Cole's work, because, and we'll talk about it now, but like Chewing Gum, which came out I think just after you left university, was sort of making that point, which is, you know, you can just do your own thing and you can be a very sort of peculiar mix of things, and you don't you know, the way that she represented a young Black woman was against all the tropes that most shows would have attributed to a young Black woman. So talk me through that. What was that like watching that when you had just sort of emerged from university, having had this quite difficult experience?
I feel like I remember distinctly when I first saw the advert for chewing gum. And I remember kind of like rolling my eyes, because I thought, oh, here we go.
And live the life other people live.
It's like Beyonce.
Is it?
But she still has a lot to learn. Step into Tracy's world.
I don't remember if I was supposed to wear clothes for this bit or not.
The one kind of show we get with a Black protagonist every 5 years, 10 years, whatever, I just assumed it'd be gone wrong, because I just was like, I had no idea who Michaela Cole was or whether she'd written it. I just saw this comedy about a Black girl. You know, I remember hearing her mum's accent on the advert and being like, oh, well, at least they've got that right, because that's something even to this day, it's very rare that you hear African accents, but like done correctly, like on these kind of shows. I'd be lying if it was love at first sight, because I just remember thinking, oh, here we go. You know, that there have been so many kind of shows that have been done wrong that I was just like, oh, this is going to be annoying. But, and I just remember being absolutely gobsmacked just by the accuracy, because I don't know, like I've almost thought, especially when it comes to the UK, and I think I had the same feeling when I watched Insecure for the first time, despite not being like an African-American woman, just seeing these like nuances of an experience just portrayed correctly. Because I think especially in the States sometimes, but in the UK, when it comes to the depiction of the Black British experience, like it's almost like it has to be done incorrectly. I was just so surprised by just how funny it was, but also just how real what it felt. I just remember being absolutely hooked from the second I saw it.
And what is chewing gum about for people who haven't seen it?
It's essentially about a young girl, I think she's like 24, Tracy. It's literally about the misadventures of a very religious, very horny, like, millennial.
Jesus loves you.
Damn, only Jesus?
I don't know, maybe your friends and family love you
too. No, it's just a joke. I was joking by way of flirting.
Ugh, hetero.
Anyway, about to fly, yes. Soul needs saving.
Do you want to take some for your friends?
As long as that's not all I'm taking from you.
Huh? And her best friend, Candace, and like this kind of motley crew of friends that she has from her estate. And, you know, her trying to basically lose her virginity and all the mishaps that happen alongside that. And obviously she's got like a very religious mother and really religious sister.
Apparently there's a hedonism-inspired plot for a party tonight. Here on the estate.
No, I think it's just Candice.
The devil will be prowling around her flat like a lion on a low-carb diet, so probably better that we stay here till tomorrow.
And yeah, it's like a very basic premise, but it's just so well done, and it's so, so, so funny.
So it feels like it came out at a time when you were really starting to think about the role that Black women have played in society, the role that they should play, you know, things about representation. Mm. Were you sort of conscious when you were watching this show that these things were linked, or were you just enjoying it and having a laugh?
I was just, this is the best thing I've ever seen. But I feel like often, even in the States, when we're seeing comedies with Black protagonists, it's, even if it's only a few times, you know, a lot of humour will kind of hinge on the fact that they're Black and that's like a punchline. But with Tracy, it just wasn't. Yeah, I don't think I was even kind of thinking about how important it was at the time. For once, there was just a very clear connection between who had written it and what she was writing about. And I don't think that's always the case.
So Chewing Gum came out and it was really transformational for you and for lots of other people who watched it. And in that time, you then wrote your book, Slay in Your Lane. And now, obviously, the reason that we're talking about Michaela Cole is because of I May Destroy You, which, you know, came out at this moment in lockdown where we were all pretty much watching telly, but also we were in the middle of a huge explosion of conversation about race and injustice and representation around the Black Lives Matter moment. And I wonder, what do you see being the, what do you see as the relationship between Chewing Gum and I May Destroy You, which is also being talked about as a really radical piece of TV?
I think the thing about Michaela Cole is just the way that she can kind of find humour in everything. She finds humor in things that aren't necessarily like immediately obviously funny or necessarily spoken about. And I think with Chewing Gum, perhaps it was obviously a lot less taboo than the conversation she was having with I May Destroy You, the kind of things that she'd have me sort of laughing at in that show, and the conversations that she kind of forces us to have through comedy. And obviously I May Destroy You is not funny at all times, but it is a funny show. I mean, I remember someone saying that, like, oh, this is the first time they've seen, like, there's a scene where obviously she's changing her pad on the toilet seat. She's, like, sat on her toilet seat changing her period pad. And someone's like, yeah, that's the first time I think I've actually seen a period pad off of, like, an advert and, like, seen it just in a day-to-day, like, experience.
Or the scene where she's with the Italian boyfriend and she's bleeding on the bed and he starts kind of looking at it.
Oh, what is that?
And the camera looks at it, and I definitely don't think I've ever seen that on television.
Oh, is that a blood clot?
Oh. I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, I don't think they're on the high streets or anything.
I've never, ever, even in the grittiest kind of dramas, I haven't seen that. And it's something that I see, like, every month. And, yeah, I've never seen it to television. I feel like there's a common thread just in the fact that one couldn't exist without the other. I feel like Chewing Gum very much opened that door in terms of certain, just I suppose being able to find humor in certain things, and just in terms of like representation actually being accurate. And yeah, I think that, you know, you watch them both and you're very much aware that this is the work of Michaela Cole. I think it's just amazing that you can see that she's been given that creative control, because that's why it's done so well in both instances.
But you've, I mean, one of the things that you talk about in your book is about how hard it can be for Black women to make it into the world of work and all of the obstacles that they have to clear. And what Michaela Cole has talked about you know, in all the press that's come in and around the launch of I May Destroy You, is that initially she was in talks with Netflix about it and they weren't going to give her really any of the rights. And then she was able to negotiate a better deal with BBC and HBO. And you've said, you know, Michaela Coel acting, writing, directing is another example of a black woman having to do, you know, three times the amount of work that would be asked of a white person. And I suppose in a lot of the conversation that we've been having, you know, in the UK as it came out, was that we were praising her for doing it, that she was this creative force that was sort of holding all the strings of this project. And actually, if you look at it through the lens that you talk about, it shouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah, that, and I mean, obviously she's very multi-talented for sure. But yeah, I definitely think that you do have to kind of prove yourself 2, 3, 4 times over to be able to occupy that space. But also because they don't necessarily and understandably don't trust that it will be done right if they're not the ones to do it themselves. I've seen certain shows and I've seen how they've come out and there have been black people in the, like, at the table and in the conversation, but they haven't been empowered to speak kind of frankly. You can literally tell they haven't been given that kind of vetoing power or like the power to really kind of put their foot down on certain issues. Because I like will watch a show and the slang's just a bit off and I'm like, I know this person knows that this is wrong, but somehow they've allowed this to go out like that. A lot of the most celebrated shows that we see from minorities in films and stuff, they actually star the writer. And I feel like often it's because, as well, in terms of acting opportunities, they're literally like writing opportunities for themselves starring that they wouldn't necessarily get.
And you've written that you feel like we're in the middle of a black creative renaissance, and I'm interested to hear whether you still think that's the case, whether you think that Michaela Coel's show is evidence of a kind of broader richness that we're living through in terms of black culture and black culture being given a platform in the mainstream, or do you feel kind of less optimistic about it now?
I feel like Michaela Coel is definitely evidence of something. I think she's, as I said, I think she's massively singular, and I think in her work, but at the moment she's singular in her existence.
I get to a position like this and I can't go, oh great, you know, everything's great. I have to keep doing my job and look around and go, hold on, I still feel like I might be a bit of an anomaly. I want to change that. So I can't rest until I'm going to keep annoying people with that.
I mean, even in the States, like, yeah, there's Issa Rae and there's Shonda Rhimes and there's Lena Waithe and black women like Ava DuVernay that are doing amazing stuff on screen, whether it be film or television. But even they are still rarities. So I feel like in the UK, there is pretty much just Michaela Coel. There has been some positive change, but I still think in terms of television, we have a long way to go.
Yomi, thank you. That was really brilliant.
You are very welcome. Thanks for having me.
We've got a long way to go. Let's not forget that just 2 weeks ago, it took a DJ called Sideman to resign from the BBC before it realised that it really had made a mistake in using the N-word in a BBC news segment, despite widespread uproar from viewers for days before that. But there's no denying Coel has changed the landscape, not once but twice, as Yomi makes clear. With Tracy in Chewing Gum, she created a female character that was charming and was cringeworthy in a way that paved the way for Arabella in I May Destroy You, and of course, if we look further, for Fleabag too. And if you want to delve into more of our slow reviews, head to our app, where we're devoting a week to re-examining the pop cultural artifacts that really brought about change. You can read Yomi's case for Chewing Gum, Pete Perfidi's on Heatwave's first two albums, without which no Michael Jackson. You could read Miranda Sawyer on Serial and the birth of modern podcasting, and much, much more. Go to tortoisemedia.com/podtrial to sign up for a free trial if you haven't already. Thanks, and see you next week.
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise.
This podcast is sponsored by EY. UK business leaders are quietly confident that better times are coming. More than half of those who responded to the recent EY CEO Outlook survey believe their profitability would increase in 2024. As businesses look to the future, transformation is clearly front and centre on the 2024 CEO agenda, with the vast majority of leaders planning to maintain or accelerate their transformational change in 2024. With 76% of CEOs in agreement that AI will deliver transformative efficiency benefits to their organisation, how can AI be put to use to enhance innovation efforts? Find out how integrating AI into your business could minimise the negative impacts on the workforce, boost productivity, and improve overall employee experience by reading the full report at ey.com. Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. The risks posed by AI range from bias in decision-making to misinformation and the misuse of personal information, all at an unprecedented scale. Nearly a quarter of UK businesses understand that the regulatory landscape is changing fast, and nearly half are tracking new regulatory guidance to be responsive to emerging best practice. The EY Responsible AI Service helps organisations innovate safely, providing confidence that AI and generative AI technologies are developed and managed ethically, transparently, and sustainably, and that potential regulatory and reputational risks are identified and mitigated. Discover how you can create a better working world with AI by going to ey.ai. Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. Safe, efficient, and reliable railways help to keep us all connected, thanks to Network Rail. Yet, maintenance on the railways is a risky and sometimes fatal business. At Network Rail, two previous attempts to invigorate its track worker safety programs had failed, leaving employees feeling sceptical that the organisation could ever get railway safety right. Since 2019, EY teams have worked with Network Rail to deliver a transformation that improved safety protocols and changed employee behaviour around safety. Network Rail RailHub, a new digital safety platform and app, eliminated inaccurate paper trails and worked offline, so it could be used by workers in remote locations. Since the platform was introduced, near misses affecting maintenance workers on the railways have fallen by 40%. Read the full story at ey.com.